American Shakedown is a worker-owned project that uncovers attitudes and philosophies that are rotting our country from the inside out. We're here to expose the corporate shills and counter-revolutionaries for the frauds they are. While we may inadvertently attack individuals identifying as the staunchest conservative or as an average liberal, our intention is not to alienate those who have fallen for neoliberal propaganda. The American corporate propaganda machine is extremely successful at manufacturing consent, so we can forgive the average Joe who has been led to think that they're the root of the cause of the problems we all face. Who we cannot forgive are the ones who actively, mindfully, and intentionally mislead our nation and our world down a path of assured self-destruction. In the name of imperialism and tyranny, these people will be the end of us all. It is only through the unification among the average populace and the development of a class consciousness can we thwart the reign of neoliberalism and build a society that works for the common person. We are here to help facilitate that unification. So, for short introductions, I am David. I am a political writer. I do, unfortunately, right now, conservative politics. Just kind of fell into it with my workplace, but I've been doing that for about a year, and that's my full-time income for now.
And my name's Hunt. I'm self-employed right now and basically work from home with my wife. We produce online stuff such as apparel and stuff like that, and it's kind of liberating not having to be around people all the time.
I can imagine, especially with all the craziness going on with the COVID-19 deniers and all that.
I mean, it's just I could go on a long rant about that, but right now I'm just hoping people, you know, stay at home and stay safe, and if they do have to work, that they are extremely careful and remain healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I have noticed my area's gotten a bit better about people wearing face masks out in public, because the first couple weeks of April, there were maybe like a handful of people out of an entire Walmart store wearing them. Now I'd say it's about 50-50.
It depends on where I'm at. If I'm in the city, it's like, you know, people are wearing masks and, you know, doing social distance. But if I'm outside the city, like any kind of suburb, they are they don't think it exists, and they are complaining about how people are drawing unemployment and how they're never going to get back to work if the government keeps on, you know, supplementing their income, even though they're terrified to go back to work. It's just a mess. It just shows you that, like, the difference between, like, you know, city and rural areas.
I mean, absolutely. And it's I think the most amusing thing to me, morbidly amusing anyways, is how the Republicans, or just conservatives in general, were so concerned about the CARES 2 Act being passed, and then people making a little bit more money while being unemployed than they would if they had just continued working. Like, they're getting another, what, $500 a month, or was it a week or something? Like, okay, I mean, how is that a problem?
it's slow. Well, like, here's the problem is that for the first time, this is how I see it, is like the playing field has been like leveled, and now people are seeing that but it's like people are now, you know, seeing the fractures in society, especially like people that are making $400 a week or making even less than that, working grocery stores or being a waiter or being a barista or whatever. And unfortunately, still a lot of those people are still having to go to work, especially grocery store workers, and they're not getting hazard pay at all.
Yeah, and they should be.
And they should be. And it's just like they're getting minimal protection. It's just like, oh, you put a little glass barrier, but that doesn't stop people from, you know, sneezing on like the bagging area or sneezing on the shelves for the people that have to restock those shelves, or like the baggers, if you have baggers in your area, which is stupid in my opinion. You should bag your own groceries.
Agreed.
And it's not enough. Like, and a lot of these people, you know, they're having to buy their own masks or buy their own bandanas or buy their own gloves because their employers are not going to provide them for them. It's just like, once again, suburban area versus like an urban area. I go to a grocery store inside the city and the employees have like, you know, masks, and they probably had to buy them themselves, but in like a poorer, more rural area, they are acting like nothing's happening, or they don't have anything provided for them. And yeah, that's terrifying. Like, we're putting so many people at risk just doing that.
For sure. Yeah, people are being put at risk. And, you know, I guess the biggest takeaway from this whole coronavirus thing is that it's just one more example of how our government in its current state is completely failing to protect its people. But this is amplified on a huge scale. And our politicians, most of them anyways, can't even get their heads out of their own asses and pass meaningful legislation because everything's just half-baked. And at the same time, Trump's coronavirus press briefings they're little more than corporate advertising. Like, oh, look at my pillow guy doing this great stuff over here. And oh, 3M got five new contracts from the Pentagon to produce masks. And of course we do need to produce those things, but it's all going to the highest bidder, and you know, with preferential treatment to Trump's donors or whoever he thinks is
crony capitalism. There's another thing that's interesting about this is that they want us to get back to work so much because they know that if we sit around forever, that we might actually realize that we have the power. Because 1 week of us just shutting down everything, the markets started to collapse. Because all these years we've been told it was the job creators that powered the economy. The job creators. Remember Mitt Romney saying the job?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now the job creators are shitting themselves because they don't have the workers anymore to power their complete dominance over the economics of our country. And it's like we had a kind of an almost forced general strike because nobody could work and the economy literally halted. And Trump started to panic because he's tied his entire presidency to the economy, as well as the Republicans by large. Like, you talk to any Republican, whether it's in person or social media, they'll be like, well, the economy's doing this, my 401k is doing this, my portfolio is doing this. Well, your portfolio is not worth crap if there's no workers to power it and those workers don't have money to buy the products that you are hawking at them. And so we almost had a forced general strike. And I think that's why there's such a sense of urgency to send us back to work, is because they don't want us to realize that we have the power. That we have the power to halt the machine. Even if it was by force because of a horrible virus that's ravaging our country.
Yeah.
And they're pushing hard. It's like, you know, you see, like, it started with just like your typical conservative pundits like Sean Hannity and Tommy, Laren, and stuff, people like them being like, oh, we got to get back to work because it's our way of life. It's, well, no, it's not your way of life. It might be my way of life, but they just know that if we realize that we could stop the machine, what's going to stop us from organizing and doing it again, which is what I hope eventually happens after we get done with this horrible mess and everybody's healthy. We can just be like, it's time to take it on. And yeah. I don't know what that looks like. That's going to require organizing and lots of coalition building and, you know, solidarity amongst everybody that, you know, or left or is a leftist. Now, but I don't think we can count on the neoliberals to do this for us because they've obviously just, you know, signed off on it already. Like, there's a reason, like, I think there's a reason why Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats did not push harder to get things, because they're bankrolled by the same people that the Republicans are. They just, you know, they're a little less evil.
Yeah, they're a little less evil. They at least, like, try to pay lip service to the progressive causes they pretend to believe in. And maybe some they, you know, they might actually believe that on some superficial level. But in practice, they're, you know, like Republicans are so much better at weaponizing politics just in general, the Democrats their priority is to keep their own positions of power and to change nothing, where Republicans are just going to drag them wherever the hell they want to.
Oh, yeah. And it's such a failed, like, idea on the Democrats' part of just like the Republicans just keep on getting crazier, and the Democrats are like, well, we're the steady hand. Well, the steady hand on the wheel doesn't mean anything if the car is on fire and going off a cliff.
Exactly.
It just doesn't. And I'm just like, we need radical structural change. And I don't believe that the Democratic Party can provide that, at least not where we're at right now.
Yeah, they can't, and they've kind of really, I think the 2020 election as it's played out so far has really demonstrated that, for especially for anyone who like hasn't paid attention to politics for the last couple of decades, but they tuned into the race this time around. Mm-hmm. It's been the story of countless moderates bowing out of the race. We started like 20 something candidates, and mm-hmm. every single one of them, save for like a couple, backed Joe Biden when they exited. No matter how progressive they claimed to be, it didn't matter, because at the end of the day, you have to back the establishment that's paying your bills, or at least helping to organize your political campaign, because where else are you going to go? Now, the only exception was Elizabeth Warren, who refused to nominate anyone, or to endorse, sorry, anyone, until Bernie Sanders dropped out. And it was only at that point when she got behind Biden, because
and she waited until Bernie endorsed him first.
Yeah. And I don't know. She's definitely a progressive senator. She's good on certain fronts. But when it comes to the radical systemic change that, you know, we're talking about and she talks about all the time, at the end of the day, it's just lip service. It just happens to be more, I don't know, maybe she does a little bit more with that lip service. But at the end of the day, the Democratic establishment is the one she's going to back no matter what, and her own political career. Yeah. And that's kind of... that just seems to be the trend of anyone who really signs on to the Democratic Party in the long run. Like Sanders.
Like, you know, she co-signed it, in my opinion. She co-signed everything that they've done in 2020. And it's been a lot. It's been like they destroyed the caucus, the Iowa caucus, to stop Bernie. They have basically undermined Me Too to stop Bernie. They have undermined all their babies that they've, you know, fostered since Trump and like Me Too and the caucus, which they've been doing since the 70s, all to stop somebody who they call a socialist. And he's not a socialist in the terms that, you know, people think he is. Like, mm-hmm. his socialism is not that radical.
Yeah, what he's pushing for is, like, really fairly moderate, like, social democracy reforms. It's not even, like, actual socialism. He's not talking about, you know, workplace ownership of the means of production or,
he's not talking about taking over and nationalizing all the oil fields in Texas. He's just, no. And it's just, like, he did a lot to bring these things highlighted, but like the tag of him being a socialist is just not in the way that the MSNBC and Fox News viewer thinks. Mm-hmm. It's just not. And it's just like, I don't know.
It's just been weaponized against him. It's just like, this is the Red Scare 2.0. You know?
Yeah, it's the Red Scare 2.0. And, like, all for what? To keep a system failing so many people and only benefiting a few? Like, what? Like, there's no long game in this. It's all short-term games. Like, if we continue down the path we're going, we're going to be, like, our generation's going to be in serfdom, and the world's going to be, you know, even more unstable than it currently is. It's just so short-sighted to just do all these things in the name of capitalism.
And yeah.
I don't think it's sustainable if we continue going the route we're going. Actually, I know it's not sustainable.
It's definitely not sustainable. It's, we're on a course for self-destruction, all for the name of, like, I don't know, it's just, there's a lot that goes into it, and and this is obviously our first episode. As you can see, we ramble all the time. But this is kind of, it just shows how all of these topics are kind of interconnected, right? Mm-hmm. There's the saying, feminism isn't feminism without intersectionality. Like, you can't analyze feminism without taking into account all of the other socioeconomic factors that affect every other group of the working class. It's really more of a class struggle than it is about one specific group getting shafted more than the other. It's like, we're all getting shafted to varying degrees. And there are common threads that we can follow to solve these kinds of issues. But I guess with that said, so this episode is a little bit introductory, so we're gonna talk a little bit about how we came to our political beliefs. Each one of us will take our turns, and then we'll talk a little bit about Bush, because Bush has been the headlines recently with the so we'll get to that, and that'll be a little bit more ranting, I'm sure, and then we'll go into some closing statements after that. But Huntley, if you want to take it away with, how did you get to your political positions? What are you, and what led you to that?
I identify as an anarchist. I've been an anarchist for years. I've voted here and there for third party and occasionally Democrat when I felt that it needed, such as in 2016, but I completely, like, abandoned the liberal, the Democrat label, probably in Obama's second term, like, early in it, especially when I realized that he was not the progressive champion that he had heralded himself to be in 2007, 2008, and all the things such as the prison program, the spying on us, the drone strikes, the high number of drone strikes that he did. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. So I went from being kind of what I would say a progressive Democrat to being a decentralist, where I'm just like, I do not believe in any kind of vertical hierarchy anymore.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, definitely one of the core tenets of anarchism is identifying power structures and unjust hierarchies.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and like people just like, they're go like, well, why do you support Bernie Sanders? And I was just like, well, I support Bernie Sanders because he's my compromise. I see him as being the person, or was to be the person to potentially take on the corporate hierarchy that, you know, has poisoned our politics and our society overall with their lobbying money and their rubbing elbows with the right people and the like cycle of retired politicians joining lobbying firms or becoming spokesmen or even vice presidents or even like chairmen, such as Chris Dodd being in charge of the NPAA and all those things. It's just like, it's a revolving door. And it's been a revolving door for a very long time. And I just got sick of it. And I'm just like, I think Republicans are not the best. And like, frankly, I think they're evil. But I think Democrats, you know, while they're corrupt, and I'm able to, you know, see the difference in that of just like, yeah, the Democrats are corrupt, but Republicans such as Trump and such as Bush, who I will probably go on a long-winded rant later about, is they're destructive. And I'm just like, I can't support that system anymore. I'll do it if I felt like, such as in 2016, where I was just like, oh, Hillary could potentially lose to Trump, and nobody believed me at the time. Everybody was like, no, there's no way. And I was like, I know people. I know a lot of people in red states. They love Trump. And I still voted for her, and I held my nose. But I'm not doing that again this year, just because of all the stuff that we've seen with the Bernie Sanders campaign. But yeah, that's why I identify as anarchist, because I just want to get rid of the power structures, period.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you're absolutely right. It's this, the revolving door is actually something I hadn't thought about in a long time, but that was a really big, that's a really big thing. When you follow the money, follow who goes into what positions of power, what government agencies, what, you know, corporate executive positions people have, it's all the revolving door. They all go in and out. And
everybody's got a hand in a pocket.
Exactly. I'd like, that was actually a big thing that kind of disillusioned me from mainstream politics a while ago, but it's been a while since I really thought about that. I just kind of take it for granted now. Yeah. So I guess my history is, I don't know if it's particularly weird or unusual, but it definitely feels like to me. It's definitely unexpected. I never saw myself becoming any kind of leftist at all, ever. So it's been very interesting. I guess, you know, of course, 9/11, this is like sort of the cliche answer, but 9/11 was like the moment when I realized that our government doesn't care. They treated us like, you know, sheeple, basically. They didn't give us the full story, and then they created this whole surveillance state under Bush. And again, we'll get to Bush in a minute, but so I just had this innate distrust of government ever since then. That was like, I was a freshman in high school at that point. And but even still, like, one of my core tenets that I've always had has been just the empowerment of the individual, and let's see how far we can push humanity, right? Kind of the Star Trek envisioning of the future. Like, how far can humanity as a species go? This would be awesome. We could do all this crazy stuff. So I was always looking for ideologies and philosophies that were about empowering the person and the individual. And eventually, unfortunately, I found Ayn Rand, and I read Atlas Shrugged like twice. and I identified as an objectivist. I was a libertarian for most of my 20s, even after that. But one of the big things that turned me off from objectivism after about a year, maybe a year and a half of like being really hardcore with it, was every single self-proclaimed Ayn Rand follower that I ever met was an insufferable asshole. And there were no exceptions. It's just, yeah, it's insane. It was, I couldn't believe it. So that was a huge red flag. Like, okay, an ideology that proclaims itself to not be a cult, and it turns out, you know, manufactures a bunch of assholes. I don't know. There's something wrong with that. So I started like distancing myself from objectivism and whatever, but I'd still considered myself a libertarian because, you know, it's all about freedom and whatever, even though it's half-baked. Gosh, so that was about like 10 years ago or something. Now, my transformation didn't really start until probably 2018. Like early to mid 2018 is when I found Destiny. I actually found him before when he was playing StarCraft too, but he started getting into politics and debating a bunch of alt-right people and just like totally, you know, slamming them. And it was great to see. But I hadn't really paid attention to politics for the last decade because it was just too much for me. I already knew everything was broken. I couldn't really handle knowing exactly how it was broken. And I saw him debating these people and I just realized, like, where did all of this racism come from? Like, even back in 9/11, like, there was still plenty of xenophobia against Muslims and whatever, but like, this is like a consistent thing that just, you know, it's all over Fox News. Like, and this is like a regular thing, not because of a one-off event. So that's when I started to kind of like pay a little bit more attention. And then I got into I've been a freelance writer for about 3 years, and I got into this company, and they have multiple divisions. And eventually I fell into the politics division. And I've been writing politics with this company for about a little bit over a year now. And unfortunately, all they have is conservative politics. So I was like, well, at least I get to learn about stuff. And I'm in a better mental state to keep up with the world now. And almost immediately, within the first month, I just swapped my alignment from like, kind of, sort of, maybe a libertarian to straight up social democrat. I was straight up for social democracy, like within a month. Because the amount of mental gymnastics you have to go through to justify Republican rhetoric is insane. You have to lie in so many ways. And I just, you know, you can't be consistent with it. It's not designed to be consistent.
No, it never was.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not since Nixon.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Like, especially not since Reagan. It's just like, when Reagan took power, we saw just like the evangelicals, and honestly, I hate to say it, when the evangelicals started packing the Republican tent, I feel like a lot of racism came with them. Because it's the Nixon Southern strategy, just times 10. And like, look at it now with Trump, is you have so many white nationalists supporting Donald Trump. Uh-huh. And it's like, they were always there. They were just, you know, they were more hidden. And with Trump, they became emboldened to, you know, to literally take to the streets like they did in Charlottesville.
Yeah, it didn't take but a couple months for them to finally feel comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, they felt completely comfortable. Like, you know, being from the South like I am, I always grew up with like people that, you know, I would make friends and I'd be like, oh, they seem pretty cool. And then, you know, once I got to really know them, or I was in their house where they were, you know, secluded from the rest of society, that's when I would start hearing like the casual racism, and sometimes just like bold racism, just open the minute they felt safe around me. So it was always there. Luckily, I do not know any of them anymore. And usually, even at a young age, I was just like, well, I'm out.
Yeah.
But they were always there. And they became emboldened, and I'm sure that they are doing that. They are totally stoked about Trump right now, especially now that we now have an immigration ban with the justification of COVID being the reasoning for it. And my biggest worry is how long does that ban actually last?
Yeah, exactly. And there's no telling. You know, as with all kinds of authoritarian regimes and whatever, and America's not an authoritarian regime yet.
No.
It's kind of a soft authoritarianism.
It's a very soft one. He's too lazy to be an authoritarian.
He's too lazy. He's too egotistical. And yeah. He doesn't want to tarnish his image. He's much more obsessed with the aesthetics of what it means to look like a successful person rather than to actually be a true leader. And that vanity is the only real thing that's keeping him from going full on fascist.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's stopping him from trying to do a coup is that his hotel rooms would not fill up quickly enough and that he would have no chance of ever starting a television empire whenever he leaves the White House.
Exactly.
But
I'll just wrap up my story real quick. So I was at Sockton for a little bit, and probably for about 6 months. And there were two big things that really. So I was always like interested in leftism, but I was no rush to really adopt any of the principles. But there were two main things that pushed me. First was the summer of 2019 when the whole immigration, the whole refugee thing happened, and ICE was detaining these people. They were treating them like not even like human beings. It was abhorrent. Actually, it was borderline genocide, as literally defined by the by NATO. We were only missing one criteria, which is just outright indiscriminate killing, to meet the 5 criteria for genocide. And when I saw the Democrats fail to grow a spine and stand up to the Republicans about what to do about it and the funding bill to pass to provide these people with blankets and soap and all this other, at least like that, you know, the Democrats couldn't even stand up for that. So it was at that point when I fully realized that our system as it is, our congressional system at the very least, is broken. And then the second thing was, I think, what was it, October or November with the Bolivia coup? So throughout 2019, there were two YouTubers I watched a lot that really helped me put things in perspective. One was David Pakman, who's a social democrat, and the other was Bo of the Fifth Column, who's an anarchist. And when I saw David Pakman just completely distort what happened in Bolivia, which, let's make no mistake, it was a military coup to overthrow a extremely popular and consistently democratically elected president of Bolivia, who did a lot of good, who is a socialist, right, mind you, but he did a lot of good for his country. When Pakman failed to give him a fair representation because he's a socialist and he would rather side with the forces of capital, at least their interpretation of things, that's when I, you know, social democracy is as far left as you get before you start having to really consider socialism, right? When you actually start talking about the collective means of the means of production. And to see such a progressive with such a far left stance defend the interests of capital at the end of the day, because Sockdem is fundamentally capitalist, that's when I completely lost faith in capitalism. So I just kind of turned to anarchism. I'm not totally set on exactly what kind of leftist I am, but I think anarchism is the right lens to look at it through. Because we've seen what happens when too much power gets consolidated into too few hands. It doesn't matter if it's Caesar. It doesn't matter if it's Stalin. It doesn't matter if it's Hitler. It's just the very nature of power structures. Power itself is corruptive. And so we have to redistribute that power as much as possible and prevent authoritarian dictators from rising up. So that's where I stand. I'm an anarchist of some sort, probably an anarcho-syndicalist, if you want to be. I don't know, whatever. It doesn't matter too much. I'm a leftist. We're leftists. Yeah. That's what matters.
Yeah, we're leftists. We're leftists. That's what matters. We may, like, differ than, say, the average, you know, Bernie supporter, but we're leftists at the end of the day. And we can get into, like, different degrees of leftism on another episode, because there's a lot to unpack with it.
Oh yeah.
But I think we need to talk about
big old Bush,
because I think that without Bush, like, say, like, in the ideal world, that, you know, Al Gore did win in 2020 and he pushed his wonderful censorship agenda on us. But I think if we did not have Bush, we would have never had Trump. Bush paved the way for Trump. And that's why it's so hilarious, especially when you check Democrat Twitter. And I'm not talking about leftist Twitter. I'm talking about resist Twitter, donut Twitter, the normies, people that, you know, watch MSNBC, that watch CNN, that, you know, the Biden supporters, or, like, people that were, you know, not so hot on Bernie. The most puzzling thing happened, like, this week, and it's been a long, slow burn with Bush since he left the White House, but this week just really took the cake for me. Was when he released a video talking about unity with the coronavirus, you know, decimating everything in our country, from our lives to our financial well-being to everything. And Bush was talking about unity, and the good liberals took it upon themselves to, you know, praise him. Some even said, "I voted against you twice, but man, I would prefer you over Donald Trump." Okay. Or people are just like, "Now that's presidential."
That's real leadership material.
That's real leadership material. Like, the only difference to me between Bush and Trump is Trump's loud and he's rude. And that's, like, I'm not saying Trump's a good person by any means, but
of course not, though.
When we look at, like, Bush, because in 2004, John Kerry and George W. Bush, we were told that Bush was the end of the world. If we allowed him to get elected again, he would be the end of the American empire. It'd be possibly the end of the world. And now you have Democrats praising him, cheering him on as almost a resistance hero. And it's just like, it kind of bothers me. Because, we're going to talk about several things that Bush has done during his presidency that doesn't make him even remotely a hero, not even a friend in my book to anybody that wants what's better for the world, because he was incredibly destructive.
He really was. And it's, you know, he's just another force that perpetuates American imperialism. This time it just happens to be through the military route more so than previous presidents, at least, you know, for the last couple decades before him. And it's astounding that people can just forget it because there's been this long-standing campaign to just to whitewash his image. Of course, that video is the most recent example. There was another one, what was it, sometime last year with Ellen DeGeneres and Bush sitting at a baseball game, like, oh yeah, these progressive liberals and, you know, monstrous Republicans can just get along because we're all human beings at the end of the day. It's like, this is true on a superficial level, but you're missing all of the context behind the horrific crap that Bush did, started, and also perpetuated during his 8 years.
Yeah, like, I don't know if Ellen's aware, but we're still in Iraq, a war that we started on false pretenses. We've been in Iraq since I was in my early teens, and they're like, right now, if we look at the civilian deaths alone, there has been between an estimated 185,000 to 207,000 civilian deaths in Iraq. And that entire war was started on false pretenses, the weapons of mass destruction, which just kind of conveniently, you know, let go of.
And those numbers only came out fairly recently, right? Like sometime last year.
Yeah.
But they've been hidden from us for this whole time.
They've been hidden from us for years because it would show that, you know, we literally decimated a country and we weren't greeted as liberators. It was American imperialism at work. We wanted resources. Some people could say that Bush wanted to finish what his dad said. I don't know about that, but it doesn't matter. It was American imperialism, and incredibly destructive, and then destabilized a region even further. And like, how can you rectify like cheering George W. Bush on just because he's not rude, because he's not, you know, loud and obnoxious like Orange Man Bad? He's left mountains of bodies in his wake. And that's not even, that's just what we know. Like, Bush, under the Bush administration, we broke Geneva Conventions on torture, as they like to call them, enhanced interrogation techniques, where we tortured people. For information that was most of the time not reliable. There's been many documentations, many articles about, like, half the information that they extracted wasn't even reliable.
Yeah, because you'll say anything if you're being tortured just to make it stop. It's not like the spy movies, like, we're so brainwashed to believe, where it's like, oh, you just pull out a tooth and you'll get the name of the bad guy, and your job's done, then you go get him. That's not how it works in real life, but you know, that's what we're taught to believe through our Hollywood and everything.
I'll say anything if you put really bad pop music on. I'll be like, yeah, yeah. And much less having my pulled out or simulated drowning. So, like, that information's just not reliable. But they kept on. They did it for a long time on black sites, and to avoid international law, to subvert the Geneva Conventions. And it's just like, it baffles me. And like, even if we just ignore the foreign policy disasters and the war, like even in domestic policy and even on a national front, Bush is atrocious. I wonder if Ellen ever read what President Bush said about gay marriage when he endorsed an amendment to ban gay marriage. And this is what he said: the union of a man and a woman is the most enduring human institution, honored and encouraged in all cultures and by every religious faith. Marriage cannot be severed from its cultural, religious, and natural roots without weakening the good influence of society. Now, Last time I checked, Ellen is a lesbian, correct?
Last I was aware of, yes.
Last year, yeah. Well, we're going to work under the assumption because I think it's pretty safe. yeah. How does Ellen, you know, go to a baseball game with somebody that literally wanted to use religion to justify undermining her rights?
Yeah, this the mental gymnastics. I don't, you know, there's no telling.
Mental gymnastics right there. It's just like...
Even more than the average conservative, I would argue.
Yeah, even more than the average conservative. Bush was extremely, extremely religious. It was like the push was that he was not your typical neoconservative. He was a compassionate conservative. And the compassionate came from fundamental theology. So, like, how, like, even Ellen and the other and others, you know, how do you cheer Bush on when he literally did not think you deserve the same rights as other people? And another thing is Bush's response to Katrina. Now you can ignore. It's easy to compartmentalize, unfortunately, for a lot of people, death that happens overseas. It is. They can use the justification, well, that's just war. I don't think war should kill 200,000 civilians by any means, but hey. But even on a domestic front, Bush's Katrina response left almost 2,000 Americans dead, at the official number 1,833 that we know of. That was a colossal failure. And let's be honest, those people that died were you know, African Americans, people of color. They weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like there's so many things. In right mind, ignore all of these things that Bush did and just be like, you know what? He sure is presidential. It just doesn't make sense to me. It just baffles me. Like, how do you do the mental gymnastics, or just like, how do you connect those dots?
Yeah. I don't think they do.
They don't.
I think one of the realizations I've kind of come to lately is if you just slap a fancy, nice, well-spoken, fluffy, sentimental message on whatever topic it is you're talking about, the average liberal just eats that up because it's the aesthetics of, oh, wow, this guy actually cares about something. Wow, this guy has convictions or whatever. They're not reading into the subtext. They're not realizing that this is propaganda. They're just taking everything at face value, even more than the average conservative does, I think. You know, at least the average conservative has like some kind of principles of American exceptionalism or individuality or freedom or whatever. At least they have beliefs. It seems just a lot of liberals and really just the Democratic Party at large is what this is getting at, is they're morally bankrupt. They don't stand for anything. As long as they can present themselves in the most comfortable way possible and appeal to the most people as possible, that's all they care about. As long as everything stays the same and it's comfortable and nothing fundamentally changes, as Joe Biden has said, that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm. And like Bush is just like, he is the most powerful person out of these. And did you watch that Lincoln Project video at all?
The Lincoln Project. I'm not sure.
It was an ad made by former Republicans or never Trumpers who have somehow managed to gather power inside the Democrat Party, which I don't know how, they couldn't even save their own party, so they're coming to the Democrats. But the Lincoln Project was basically a video of Trump's failure handling COVID.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right. This was the people that Trump labeled as rhinos, Republicans in name only,
Yeah, and I'm like, some of them are some of the most hardcore conservatives out there, in my opinion. They just don't agree with Trump because they're neocons and not populists.
Mm-hmm.
But like one of the big ones is Rick Wilson. And I don't know how much you know about Rick Wilson, but like he's another one that I see a lot of liberals like retweet and like his tweets or like share them or share what he says on different social media outlets. And like Rick Wilson is a pretty terrible human being, in my opinion.
I don't know too much about him, but I mean, if he hangs out with that group of people, then
I'm going to give you something. Forgotten, and you know, actually, I remember this vaguely from when I was a teenager, but I had no idea Rick Wilson played a part in it until now. But according to, he worked for Chambliss, who was a former senator of Georgia. And he ran against Max Cleland, who was a Vietnam veteran who had multiple limbs blown off and was disabled. And he was the Democrat incumbent for Georgia. So Rick Wilson, the good resistance hero that he is, back in 2002, compared a disabled war veteran senator in a commercial tying him to Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein.
Oh, God.
Said that, like, put his picture next to Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. And questioned a man that lost multiple limbs in Vietnam about his patriotism. That's Rick Wilson. That is the champion, the conservative, never Trumper champion, a person that did something disgusting to a war hero. And I don't know. Like, where, like, has Trump just broken the system so much that the Democrats are just as deranged as Republicans are now? Because it seems like it to me.
It could, well, you know, I think they did get, I think you're right, they did get broken in 2016 when the famed Hillary Clinton, the golden child of the Democratic Party, next to Obama, of course, she lost to Trump. And from that point on, and it caught them all blindsided. They all took Trump as a joke. They had, and they didn't realize where America was actually going, because they're not in touch with our society at all.
No, they're completely out of touch. Like, they're watching CNN, MSNBC, and reading the New York Times, and, you know, and occasionally being active, thinking on social media that, you know, retweeting or liking a page or sharing a page is resistant. Not. While people like you, me, and like our friends, you know, had to work and stuff like that. We were like, no, nah, man, he's got a shot. I don't care how qualified Hillary is. I do think she was was very qualified for the president, to be the president. I didn't like any of her policies, but compared to Donald Trump, who bankrupted casinos, she was the right choice.
Uh-huh. And, yeah.
But nobody believed us. They were just like, there's no way this buffoon is going to win the presidency. Well, he did. And now, because he won the presidency and because Democrats have become so deranged by it, they're settling for a platform that is less progressive than 2016.
Yeah. And it's insane. There's this there's this joke I heard. I forget how the original one goes, but the modern one is scratch a liberal and a fascist bleeds. Right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and it's you know, maybe not a direct like liberals or fascists, but at the end of the day, even again, like I said with about David Pakman, and this isn't just about Pakman, by the way, this is historical precedence with social democracy in general. It doesn't matter how left you are. At the end of the day, capitalists look out for capitalists. And the natural conclusion of capitalism is anarcho-capitalism in some sense.
Oh, God, those guys.
Yeah, right? And it's hilarious. We can definitely talk about them forever.
We will do an on the good Anacaps.
Yeah.
Because they are a hoot.
Yep. It's hilarious. But you know, at the end of the day, they just liberals want the status quo. They want something comfortable. And to them, siding with neocon war hawks who promote American imperialism at the expense of not just the population, indigenous populations, but foreign and indigenous, actually, and the planet as a whole, they'll side with neocons and even fascists rather than Trump, who like immortally wounded their ego for the rest of time.
Yeah, I think it's ego. I think it's like their egos were there. How did we lose to him?
Mm-hmm. They totally underestimated the vitriol that a lot of the average populace felt towards Clinton, Hillary.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people viewed Hillary as a snake, but for the people who are upper middle class or established Democrats or whatever, they're so insulated from the average person's lifestyle that they didn't know that. They couldn't even fathom that.
Yeah, it's just like they are so insulated in the suburb of like they go to a grocery store, they go to a mall, and it's just like most of the time those are young workers that have been disenfranchised because they don't think politics work for them. And the older people that vote Republican, like there's so many people that especially there's more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. But Republicans keep on winning. And unions endorse Democrats, but a lot of their members break away from that and vote Republican still because they feel that the Democrat Party doesn't represent them or, you know, gave up on them, maybe even. Especially you look at so many neoliberal policies that have been destructive for the working class by shipping jobs overseas with NAFTA, the deregulation of banks under Clinton, and that paved the way for the financial meltdown in 2008. And we haven't learned our lesson, especially like the Democrats who keep on pushing the same policies. They don't evolve. Republicans are evolving for the worse, by the way, because they're just getting crazier. But the Democrats just refuse to evolve to change with the times.
Yeah, they refuse, and they're even getting outflanked on the left by Trump. Like, this is how stagnant they are. This is how out of touch they are, that they're getting... Trump's passing, like, more leftist policies than a moderate Democrat could even ever feel comfortable with passing.
Yeah, like...
It's insane.
The entire means tested when the COVID first got bad. And they were just like, we need to means test it, or we need to do a tax credit, or just like, and I'm just like, I understand, like, wanting to make sure, but people are going to starve if you do not get them some money. And unfortunately, even after getting outflanked by the Republicans, like Mitt Romney was the first person to suggest UBI. Mitt Romney.
Yeah, of all people.
Of all people. And I just, you know, they like somebody was just like, well, you can't throw gasoline on a fire and think it'll put it out. And I'm just like, okay. When it comes to regards with like Bernie Sanders or more radical approaches to trying to push the Democrat Party left, more left. And they're just like, oh, you can't fight fire with fire. It's like, well, what are you going to do? Just stand there and watch it keep on burning? And that seems to be their only solution.
Yeah, and that's like the centrist appeal of neoliberalism that we've been conditioned to take for granted. We can't, you know, just imagine thinking outside of that system because it's too uncomfortable or it's just too radical to whatever. Really, like, to be a little bit fair, it does take a lot of analysis to get to this point. You know, there's a lot of hardship and heartache and betrayal that goes into the journey of being a leftist in most cases, but that doesn't mean that we don't have a point, and they want to paint us like we don't have a point. We're just rabble rousers. We're too radical, and we're never going to be content or satisfied with anything. Yeah. And
or we're cult members.
Yeah, we're cultists. Yes.
Yeah.
At least the cultist accusation is like a little bit more fun, but
yeah, you know. At least that's more fun. But I think I think there's some shock, especially now, because even after 4 years of Trump, they think that Bernie supporters were going to be like, yeah, we can get behind Joe Biden. So uh-huh. That kind of breaks apart the entire notion. You know, anybody that supported Bernie was a cultist, because there's a lot of us that, you know, the minute he said, I'm endorsing Joe Biden, we're like, well, we're out. Don't care.
There's a lot of, and that was one of the great things. Oh gosh, there's like two directions we could go with this, is talking about how Bernie has done he's done God's work, essentially, uniting the left in a very peaceful, hippie-ish kind of way. But he's been very successful, very effective, and that can never be discounted, even as much as people might hate Bernie for endorsing Biden. It's just, personally, I think he dropped out as soon as he did because of all the accusations by liberals of, oh, Bernie, you're killing people because of COVID-19 by continuing your campaign.
And he was the one that spoke out
against it. Yeah. And I think he just has too big of a heart. And that's what that was the underlying motive of him dropping out.
Yeah. And I a part of me's felt that way too. It's just so weird that like they seem shocked, especially at 16, that people still don't want to get behind the neoliberal trash can and push it again. It's not working, and it hasn't been working for a long time.
Yeah, it hasn't, and we've got to do something. Reforming the Democratic Party is the approach that a lot of people want to take, or at least want us to take. And you know, while there are many, this is a war, this is a culture war that we're fighting, and there are many different fronts on which to accomplish the objective. But, and you know, maybe reformism is part of it, but then if the system as it functions now is just fundamentally incapable of doing anything, then we also have to explore other alternatives. And this is where I have been I have more of a conclusion now, but for a while I was kind of lost between either the Bernie or bust argument or voting green or doing something else. And as broken as our electoral politics is, I think the Bernie or bust argument is not ever going to work, because the reason that a huge reason that Republicans keep winning, like you mentioned before, even though there are more Democrat voters, is because of voter suppression tactics. and voter apathy and the lack of voter turnout. Like, America ranks, I don't know, somewhere like 50 or 60th on democracy or something as far as turnout goes. Mm-hmm. We're like 50 to 55% average for electoral turnout.
And that's when the high, that's like when it's like high.
Oh, yeah, that's like national elections where, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like because, well, that's voter enthusiasm, and people were enthusiastic to vote for Obama in 08. I don't see that enthusiasm for Biden.
No way. No way. People are so disillusioned, and Biden's so lackluster. He can barely finish a sentence, although he's gotten a little bit better now, but mostly it's just kind of his wife seeming to like guide him through all of his talks now. It's just like making you question who's actually the president, like who's actually wearing the pants in the White House.
Oh man. It's just like what you said. It's like there is apathy, and the turnout alone is just like Bernie did not turn out the youth that he needed to win. He didn't. And we could talk about suppression, we could talk about that, but if we want a functioning democracy, we have to, you know, use our leverage and vote. And I don't know what the next couple of months is going to look like with the Joe Biden campaign. I mean, we have so much going on now. It's just like, is he going to make any concessions to the left, or is he going to keep on chasing those never Trumpers?
There's no telling. I mean, 2020 has been so unpredictable on every single front. Like, we just have to play this by ear up until November, really. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think, I mean, just going back to the Bernie or bust, because I know a lot of people, I see a lot of people on Twitter especially calling for that, and people like Kyle Kalinske really pushing that narrative. Like, I get it, but I think the only two viable options are, if you really want to actually change something, you have to put your voice into the electoral system, as meaningless as it may be at the end of the day. We have to work with what we've got, and that's one of our tools. So you're either going to vote Biden or you're going to vote third party, probably Green, but whatever third party. And it just by abstaining, like, that doesn't do any good right now. It never really has, and it's not going to. It's just saying like, oh, I don't really. I would even say that's like a privileged position, maybe even more than accelerationism, because at least with accelerationism you're disgruntled enough to like speed up the process of collapse, which I think is a mistake, especially in this time. Like, we're the left has to win the culture war, and the right's winning very hard now.
Yeah, they've been winning very hard.
Yeah, and then, but with the no vote option, you're already that presumes you're already in a privileged position to where you're not affected by the results of an electoral outcome, so it doesn't matter to you. And that's just further feeding the voter apathy, and it's. We can't continue down that road.
No, we can't. We have to. That's why.
Oh, you cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry. And that's why I think we need to spend the next, like, no matter the circumstances of how November plays out, no matter how you vote, we need to continue just organizing, building coalitions, staying active, because they can't. They want us to be apathetic. They want us to give up, and we can't.
Yep, we can't.
That's basically my closing statement.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good place to wrap up. I mean, we have a lot of work cut out for us, but you know, we've got to keep fighting the good fight. I mean, just because Bernie lost, or suppose, you know. We'll see, but he's basically out of the race. Just because he's gone, that doesn't mean the leftist movement ends and dies with him, because it's never about him. It's about the ideology. It's about the goal.
It's never been about one person. It's about the collective.
Yep.
pushing.
If you wanted to do one person, then go with Trump.
Yeah.
You know, he's the cult of personality. So, yeah, that seems like a good place to wrap up.
Yeah.
We have definitely rambled forever.
Yeah.
And this was the first, you know, first one. We were bound to do this. This was, I kind of intended this to be a little bit unstructured, just like a couple talking points, but we'll get some more specific topics. We already have some planned out, but we'll have more structure going forward.
Yeah, more structure going forward.
Yep.
All right. Well.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in, and you know, keep doing your thing as leftists and convincing your dirty little centrist friends to join us.
And to join the cause.
Yes. All right. Later, everyone.